to Lingthusiasm, a podcast that's enthusiastic about linguistics. I'm Lauren Gorn.
And I'm Gretchen McCulloch. And in this 29th Patreon bonus episode, we talk about unique words in your family. But first, my book is coming out very soon.
It's like this month, right?
It is this month. It is July 23rd, 2019, for the benefit of listeners from the future, at which point it will already be out, and I don't know how to deal with that.
I'm excited about it. We will have a main episode about some of the work in your book in the week before it's out. But since this is a Patreon bonus episode, and we like kind of bringing you guys into the kind of how of we do this work as much as the work that we do, Gretchen, you are open to answering questions for people who either pre-order or read the book in the first week, yes?
Yeah, we're going to record a behind-the-scenes episode for next month about what it's like to publish a book, because that's a thing that I've been learning a lot about recently, and it's a very interesting world, and I'm sure is all I'm going to be thinking about at that point. So if you get the book soon, if you pre-order it or you get it that first week it's out, you will have time to actually answer those questions in time for us to record them for the next month. So make sure you get it early, both because this is very helpful for me as a person who's trying to sell lots of copies, but also because that will let you ask questions that, you know, we can answer about the content of the book or what it's like to go through that kind of book publishing process, which is very mysterious.
And I'm just really excited for you guys to read it because it's great.
Lauren's already read it. Spoiler. She likes it too.
I love it when people realize that they have this unique vocabulary in their family or in their relationships or in their friendship circles. And we have so many great examples to share today. And I like it because it really strikes at the heart of this idea that, you know, we all speak the same language, except for when we don't.
Yeah, like linguists talk a lot about idiolects, like the individual version of English that I speak, which is slightly different from what you speak, Lauren, or slightly different from any one individual person. But in addition to the idiolects of a specific person, we also speak in the ways that are informed by the people we talk to. And so that's why linguists talk about familects as like the way of speaking that your particular family has or your particular group has. And I came across this word familects in a book called Kitchen Table Lingo, which has an intro by David Crystal. And it collects a bunch of examples from around the UK of various types of words that people have from their specific families. And one of the things that I find really funny about it is that many of the things that people seem to need words for are common, even if those words aren't common. And one of those is this book has 57 individual familect words for the TV remote control, including words like hoofa doofa, doogie, and pogger.
Oh, that's a great one. We put out a request on our Twitter, and I'll link to the thread because it's amazing, of just asking people for their family dialect words that they use. And like three or four different people had remote control as a word. We had the plonker, the flick, and the box, which like clearly the TV remote is just, we didn't even ask people about it specifically.
No, no.
It's just clearly something that people have their own word for.
My favorite example of familect words for TV remote controls is this example that I saw on Tumblr, cross-posted from Twitter. This person named Neely posted about, and this entire thing is in all caps. I will not shout it while I'm reading it, but you just know that this entire thread is in all caps.
Oh my gosh, so many exclamation marks.
My whole life has been a lie. I was just eating dinner with my parents and my mom asked in Farsi for me to pass her the remote control. I was like, what? Mom points to the tongs, says in Farsi, give me the remote control. Me, you mean the tongs? Mom, yeah, please pass it over. After I pass it over, I'm like, why did you call the tongs the Persian word for remote control? Which she never gives. I really want to know what this word is. And she just very nonchalantly blows my mind. Mom says, this word is just a filler word. You know, I couldn't remember the word for tongs, so I said this word. And the person who says the tweet is like, what? No, what? Like, for 28 years of my life, the word in Farsi that I thought meant remote control was actually just the Farsi equivalent of thingamabob, WTF. And her mom's like, wait, you thought this was the actual word for remote? Yes, mother, I did think that. I learned Farsi from you and dad. You guys call it that word.
10,000 exclamation marks.
10,000 exclamation marks. So then she says, well, what's the actual word for remote control then? And mom's like, I don't know, maybe just the word control, but in English with a Persian accent? And the mom's like, why is this such a big deal? Like, she didn't just shake the foundation of my entire world. I learned Farsi from you guys. How much of my knowledge of Farsi is just fake words that you made up?
It does speak to the importance of your family as the place where you learn language.
If I was at someone's house and I asked where this word is, they just look at me like, what are you talking about? And her mom just laughs at her. And this is, it's just such a delightful exchange. And it was very much reblogged, very much retweeted, because people clearly resonated with it.
Definitely. And I think families where parents have, or grandparents have, or family members have different first languages, you get a lot of this where people think that a word is a made-up family word, or the opposite. They think it's a real word and it turns out to be a made-up family word.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff gets borrowed from other languages in the family context because everybody has that certain level of bilingualism, or they have that familiarity with another language, and so they borrow something in.
We had this in my family for our word for farting. A fart was a puk.
Hmm.
And I just thought that was a really, like, nice, vaguely kind of onomatopoeic kids word for farts.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be onomatopoeic.
Until on the internet I came across one day, it was like a list of the word for fart in different languages. And it turns out that that's just a Slavic word for fart.
Oh, whoa.
And so that's what my Polish grandmother had used. And rather than being like child dialect or a family innovation, it turns out it was a Polish word.
Huh, that's great.
And so it turns out we have, and there were quite a few things when I first went to Poland, I discovered it wasn't just like random things my nan said. It turns out it was actually, believe it or not, Polish.
What? You mean a speaker of Polish was speaking Polish sometimes?
So I had like the opposite of the thingamajig mind blowing, where I was like, oh, that's not just a family word or a made up word. That is, well, all words are made up. Those words were made up in Polish.
Those words are made up by like a giant speech community way across an ocean that were already using those words, not just like your grand personally.
And everyone agreed on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And we got a bunch of examples when people were replying to stuff of either people had lived in a particular area for a while, and so they picked up words from the language spoken in that area and then brought the words into the family, like even when they didn't live there anymore, or their first languages of somebody in the family was something else, and so they'd borrowed words across from that as well.
I like Kenzie Cooperider is a linguist, and in the Twitter thread was very interested in this moment of like when you realize that something is really just a word in your family, or the opposite, the thing I had, when you realize that actually the word you thought was made up was a word that everyone uses. And this is kind of part of the, again, this thing of when you think everyone just speaks English. And you constantly have these little negotiations you do all through your life where you discover, you know, people in Canada speak a different variety and have different words. But then people who live down the street from me or people in my own family have different words or meanings for things.
Yeah, one that came up for me was Amanda McLaughlin, who does this spirits podcast that I was on a while back, actually. She commented that her family had this word smackerel for a small snack.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I was like, wait a second, my family has that one.
Oh, right. Yeah, we had a couple of those in the Twitter thread as well, where people were like, my family have this quirky family word for this thing. And it's like, oh, four other people have that too.
Yeah, and so eventually we traced it back to Winnie the Pooh.
Because
Pooh is always having these little small smackerels of something, which is always honey, but he just says, I have a little smackerel of something, which is like a small snack. And for Amanda, her family, it was like a snack that you have before dinner to kind of stave your appetite off. And for me, it's like an evening snack that you have like right before bed, but it's a similar kind of concept of just a small snack. But yeah, it seems to be in Winnie the Pooh, and it's not clear. I spent a fair bit of time trying to figure out whether this was a word that A.A. Milne had invented for Winnie the Pooh, or whether it had been kind of around in the dialect earlier. It seems unconclusive, but I feel like maybe it was older than Winnie the Pooh as well.
I like that you have slightly different meanings for this family word, because one thing that you find with family-lect words is that they create these little semantic innovations. So you need a word specifically for that snack before a meal or that snack before bed. One of the ones in our Twitter thread from Cass Hunter, which I like because it's so amazingly specific. Like, it's amazing to think people need a word for this, but in her family, they have the word bongi, which is specifically for a sausage, which is like the right amount of meaty with like a nice strong skin on it.
That's a very specific word. Yeah.
This is a family that have like strong opinions about sausages.
One of the examples that I really liked from the Kitchen Table Lingo book is there's this word in somebody's Familect, shoeburiness, which is the vague, uncomfortable feeling you get when sitting on a seat that is still warm from someone else's bottom.
Oh my gosh, I know that feeling.
I know, me too.
This is like our episode on untranslatable words, but like, we're all English speakers.
Yeah, like, wait a second, that word, someone came up with a word for it.
Every family is just individually filling in a few of these really important semantic gaps that we have in the language.
Yeah, and it's interesting, it highlights some of these gaps that like we've all experienced, but only some families bother to come up with a word for.
Something that kept coming up in the Twitter thread is that one of the semantic innovations people make is just to name things in their family and then over-apply it. So Amy Lowe has her coffee machine is named George, after George Clooney, who sells coffee.
Seems legit.
I like Claire Shelbourne. Her family renamed their TomTom GPS to Jane Jane because they had a female voice.
That's delightful. Yeah.
So it can't be Tom.
No.
They renamed her Jane Jane when she gives them directions. Whereas Lindsay Smith has named her GPS many years ago Gary, and now whenever asking for directions, it's all asking what way Gary tells them to go. We have a habit of naming things in our household, and the one I'm most proud of is our vacuum cleaner.
Oh my god, that one is so good.
So our vacuum cleaner's name is Rossum. He is the only pet that we've ever had. but he's a very good and hardworking pet. We named Rossum after Rossum's Universal Robots, which is a Czech play from the 1920s. And it's the first time that robot appears in Czech. And then it was borrowed into English from Czech because it's the Slavic word for work.
I knew that robot came from Czech, but I didn't realize the Rossum connection.
And so that's where it comes from.
I remember the first time I came to your flat, Lauren, and you weren't even there. And I saw on like your fridge or something, like a note that was like, you know, do something, something with Rossum. And I was like, oh, this must be Lauren's like other roommate or cat or child. Like, you didn't have a child at the time. Like, who's Rossum?
I now refer to all vacuum cleaners as like friends of Rossum.
When I moved into this apartment, the previous tenant, for whatever reason, had left me not a robot vacuum cleaner, but like a robot Swiffer.
A friend of Rossum.
Friend of Rossum. And so it had like, it had those like static pads that you put on to like, you know, clean the yep. floor. And I named the robot Swiffer Pierrot because I was really thinking about that like Au Clair de la Lune song. And for some reason, I wanted to have like a servant robot named Pierrot. But unfortunately, Pierrot is kind of dead because my hair kept getting stuck in his wheels.
Oh no. He had such a tough job.
Yeah. You know, he wanted to be lent a pen, but no one would lend him one. And so he died.
I think it's very important for me that anything that does manual tasks of domestic labor around the house definitely doesn't have a female name.
Oh, no, I definitely wanted like a male vacuum cleaner because yeah. otherwise we're being gender stereotypical. So. Yeah. another one that I really like, speaking of Gary, is you get these childish mispronunciations, which often catch on and take on a life beyond themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And my absolute favorite example of this, which is so good, I came across Familex when I was researching my book, which is not about Familex, it's about internet language, but I do mention Familex in it, and this is an example stolen from the book because I love it so much. And this is that Queen Elizabeth II.
Yes.
Her nickname is Gary.
Wait, no, wait, what?
I know, right?
I'm now going to refer to her as Gary.
And this nickname apparently comes from a young Prince William, I think. Anyway, one of the princes, who couldn't quite say granny yet.
Ah.
So instead of saying granny, he would say Gary. And there was some sort of party, garden party or something, where, you know, little Prince William, so this is a while ago, like little Prince William is wandering around because he's now like in his 30s.
He now has children.
He now has children. Maybe they call her Gary. I don't know. He was wandering around asking for Gary and people were like, who is Gary? Why are we trying to, like, how can we fetch him for you? And then Queen Elizabeth like pops up and he's like, oh, he's asking for me because he can't say granny yet. I am Gary.
Oh, bless. There were lots of family anecdotes in the Twitter thread and from people I've talked to about family members having names like this because my mum is known as Chrissy in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And for many years was known by one branch of our cousins as Dee Dee because that was easier to pronounce than Chrissy. So, yeah, kids, you know, speaking whole words is hard to get your mouth around. There was a very cute example from Melody Ann Ross in the Twitter thread where her family still to this day refer to Christmas lights as Didal Dites.
Oh, that's so cute.
Which is very cute.
And there was another example from the thread where Claire Duffy reports that a baby-talking four-year-old in the family, who's now 26, used to say, under the neath for it's stuck, which I think is a really cute misanalysis of underneath.
Yeah, so sometimes it's the, you know, articulating, saying the particular sounds is a challenge for children, but sometimes they actually kind of come to English with a fresh pair of eyes and reanalyze. So instead of underneath, they've reanalyzed neath as a thing that has a determiner there. So I like the neath.
Yeah, I like it. It's kind of like a whole nother, which I think is very common among English speakers, but underneath is just taking that one step further.
Yeah.
And then the funny thing is that it's often kind of the adults that keep these mispronunciations going, because kids go through them very quickly.
Definitely.
And they do readapt. And then it's the adults that are like, haha, that's actually hilarious, and make it into a thing.
We had a WhatsApp chat thread in my family. When I told them we were doing this episode, I asked them what family lect words they remembered from our family. And like 90% of them were my parents remembering things that none of us ever recall. But they remember them, and a lot of them are, like, a lot of them in the family dialect Twitter thread, you'll see it's like, my child said this, and now we all still refer to it that way.
Yeah, and the kids, like, just grows up and doesn't realize that it was even a mispronunciation, because kids don't remember stuff at that age.
Yeah.
The other kind of familect that I really enjoy is the kind that starts out as some sort of in-joke or reference to something, and then it just keeps going, and you kind of forget that it was actually a reference, and you say it, and then somebody who isn't part of the family is like, you're saying the what now?
Yes. When you forget that you're no longer speaking to your family.
The example of that has, like, just slipped into my ordinary vocabulary, and I sometimes have to explain this to friends now that, like, this is what I mean, is a familect word from my family, which is Dijon.
Mm-hmm.
Which in my family refers to something that's like the fancy version of something.
Because Dijon mustard is fancier than normal mustard.
Exactly, because Dijon mustard is fancier than normal mustard. But it specifically comes not just from this one particular generalization, but it also comes from a song by the Canadian group The Bare Naked Ladies, who are generally known outside of Canada for one of two one-hit wonders, depending. The Americans tend to know them for If I Had $1 Million.
And we in Australia know them for 1 week.
Yeah. And I won't sing either of those songs because they're very catchy. And I don't want them stuck in your head any more than they already are.
I'm going to put them in the show notes.
Go listen to them if you haven't yet. They're great. In If I Had $1 Million, there's this line that they have a bit of kind of like riffing dialogue with each other. And they're talking about all the stuff they do, kind of ridiculous stuff that they would do if they had $1 Million. One of them is we'd build a treehouse and we'd have a little fridge in the treehouse and we'd have fancy pre-wrapped sausages laid out in this fridge. And we'd serve them with ketchup, but not just the ordinary ketchup, the Dijon ketchup.
Mmm.
And this is where my family got the idea that, like, oh, maybe Dijon is just generally a fancy word for, like, a version of something. But we use it for things like, oh, you know, I bought the Dijon, like, cheese. It's the fancy cheese. Or, like the rental car place upgraded us to a Dijon car, like a fancier car that we were going to get.
Yeah.
So anything that's, like, fancier than expected is Dijon. So I think that's one of my favorite examples of that. One of my favorite examples of this in jokes that just keep going is the mispronunciation of sausages as hostages.
Uh-oh, that could go really bad.
And this came to my attention because when we were looking for examples of familect words, we also came across this thread that Iva Chung did a while back on Twitter asking for people's examples of familects, and again, getting tons of responses because they're really fun to talk about. And somebody there replied, as a kid, I pronounced sausages as hostages. God help anyone who hears us say we're having hostages for dinner.
I wonder if they're particularly bongy.
Maybe they are. And so, but then I went to look for this tweet again because I wanted to link to the specific tweet that says it. And apparently there are dozens, if not hundreds of people on Twitter who have called attention to the hostages, sausages pronunciation confusion. So this is like a real thing. Lots of people do this, apparently. You know, watch out.
Starting a word with an S is a particularly complicated thing when you're figuring out how your mouth works.
Yeah, and you get a lot of these mispronunciations like ambulance or other words.
Shout out to my sister, who also happens to be our editor, who for years referred to noodles as noonles.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. Still occasionally. We don't have pasta. We have noodles. Noodles is like the comfort food pasta.
That's great. And so, yeah, there's all these mispronunciations that kind of keep going and, you know, start out as an in-joke and then carry along. And I think that speaks to one of the things that's about the appeal of Familex. And definitely, I hope that this episode spawns even more people in the comments giving us examples from their Familex, because it's really fun to tell these stories because they encapsulate these little moments that are often very domestic and fun and, you know, positive memories of, like, here's something fun that people said that people kept using.
We had great nostalgia time chatting about this in my family. And maybe I'm feeling particularly sentimental about it at the moment because we're at the start of creating our own new family dialect.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm kind of excited to see what words remain. I've brought Pook back. I haven't referred to farts as Pooks for maybe like 15 years, but I've decided it's going to be a word.
That's great. You can like pass along the familect.
Yeah.
And then she'll go to Poland at some point and be like, oh my God, people also say Pook here.
She'll have her mind blown as well.
That's fantastic.
For more Lingthusiasm and links to everything mentioned in this episode, go to patreon.com/lingthusiasm. I tweet and blog as Superlinguo.
I can be found as @GretchenAMcC on Twitter. My blog is allthingslinguistic.com. Lingthusiasm is created and produced by Gretchen McCulloch and Lauren Gaughan. Our audio producer is Claire Gaughan, our managing editor is Emily Graff, and our production editor is Sarah Dopierala. And our music is by The Triangles.
Thank you so much for being a patron. Please feel free to share your familylect words back in the Twitter thread or here in the comment section.
And stay lingthusiastic!